Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, the great Newt Gingrich. We talk election fraud, the 2020 election, and more. If you enjoy these interviews, then please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, as always, at freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to come to the Can't Miss event of the year in Palm Beach, 5,000 young people from all across the country, tpusa.com/SAS. It's tpusa.com/SAS. Newt Gingrich is here. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Truth is so important to me. Pursuing truth is a huge part of who I am and what I stand for. When you look around at what's happening to our country, you can see why many people are experiencing real frustration with the news media, along with feelings of uncertainty and a lack of hope for the future. How can we know which news is true, and where or in whom can we place our trust? The only place I've found unwavering truth and peace is in my faith in Jesus Christ. If 2020 has beaten down your spirit, I'd like to recommend a book to you called Reflections on the Existence of God by best-selling author Richard Simmons III. Reflections on the Existence of God is a collection of short essays that tackles the biggest question of all. Does God exist? This book is well-researched and easy to read. Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, quote, "I've taught apologetics for many years and have read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read." If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. I challenge you right now to get your copy of Reflections on the Existence of God by Richard Simmons III. Go to reflectionscharlie.com. That's reflectionscharlie.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. We are thrilled to be joined today by probably one of the sharpest and most important minds on the planet, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Mr. Gingrich is also, he runs Newt 360 and Newt's World. So make sure you check out those two very important platforms. Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show, Mr. Speaker.
Charlie, it's always good to be with you. And frankly, if I can get that kind of a flattering introduction, you can have me anytime.
Well, thank you. And so can you just kick us off by giving us your analysis of what happened a couple weeks ago on Election Day? I'm under the impression and the opinion, as is many other people, that this was a red wave that was basically interrupted by four cities that decided to stop counting and with some immense irregularities. Republicans and President Trump did incredibly well. How do you see things?
Well, look, I think if you separate the Trump situation, which was so heavily motivated by absolute hatred by the news media, the internet companies, et cetera. And you look at the rest of the election, it was a substantial Republican victory. I think people like Charlie Cook, who study elections, are shocked by how well Kevin McCarthy and the House Republicans have done. The Republicans gained seats in the state House and state Senate. They picked up a governorship. In the U.S. Senate, in a very difficult environment in terms of who was up, we had an amazing number of victories, including Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, who in Maine ran, I think, 15 points ahead of Trump to get reelected. And the truth is, other than the two Georgia Senate seats, we were on the way to a very good night. We're already guaranteed 50, and if we win the two, either one of the two Georgia seats will be a majority, and McConnell will still be in charge of the Senate. Pelosi has what may be the narrowest margin since 1919, and it's going to be almost impossible for her to effectively hold the House together. And the Democrats, I'm writing a newsletter at Gingrich 360, pointing out that in 92, Bill Clinton won. And in 94, we elected the first House majority in 40 years, picking up 53 seats. In 2008, Obama won. And in 2010, John Boehner led a campaign called Where Are the Jobs? He picked up 63 seats, 10 more than I did. And my question for the House Democrats is going to be, so how many seats do you think you'll lose in 2022? Will it be a Gingrich-sized wave or a Boehner-sized wave? But in any case, it's extraordinarily likely that this is the last term for the Democratic majority for the near future. Then you get to the presidential campaign. By the way, the other good news was that on referendums, voters around the country, even in California, were turning down left-wing ideas. So every time you look below the presidency, we were doing fine. And it raises real questions about the presidential results, because it's a little hard to imagine us picking up House seats, state legislative seats, governorships, and somehow having Biden run that far ahead of his ticket, particularly given Biden's campaign. I think that it is, first of all, I stipulate the Democrats in the near future are always going to have a majority of the popular vote, because we don't really compete in New York, Illinois, and California. So they come out of those states with huge margins. But everywhere else, we're very competitive. And I think that it's, in my mind, and we're in the middle of the count right now in Georgia, but in my mind, Georgia, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan are all contested states. And I think it's very hard for me to believe that any of them is legal. Nevada, the state legislature and the governor, who are Democrats, they just basically rewrote the election law in the spring to make it legal to do everything illegal. And you can't contest it. There are former Attorney General Adam Laxalt says there are 600,000 votes that no Republican has ever seen, and that they blocked off. So in effect, you have a legally corrupt state in which the Democrats have passed laws that are just remarkably corrupt. In Georgia, for reasons that are beyond my comprehension, the Republican Secretary of State agreed to a negotiated agreement with Stacey Abrams. You can't challenge the absentee votes. So there were 1,260,000 absentee ballots. In 2018, with a much smaller number, 3.5% were thrown out. This year, it was 0.3. So they want us to believe that there were 10 times as many ballots thrown out on a smaller vote. You would think the opposite would be true. If you had a giant vote, there were probably more, not fewer. And technically, under the agreement that the Secretary of State signed, they can't go out and check any of the addresses. I mean, the whole thing is so crazy that I've called on the state legislature to take it over, because it was a change of state law without the approval of the state legislature. And if they go back and count those ballots, my guess is it's worth 40,000 votes, just that one thing. So anyhow, that's a sweeping overview of kind of where we are.
Well, it's very well put. I have a question about Georgia. So this was a Republican Secretary of State who basically surrendered to the non-elected Stacey Abrams, just gave her whatever she wanted, who was funded by, you know, tech billionaires and Hollywood liberals who were putting tons of money behind Stacey Abrams. Why would a Republican Secretary of State do this in Georgia? I'm fascinated with Georgia. You know the state better than basically anyone. How is that possible?
Well, let me say, first of all, I think Stacey, to her credit, had raised over $40 million just for the purpose of reshaping the electorate. And she had brought in a very tough Washington law firm that knew what it was doing. The Secretary of State, you know, the way I would put it simple, Republicans play badminton and Democrats play pro football. Now, you put a badminton team out on the field and a pro football team out on the field, guess who's going to get run over? And so you have these nice, well-meaning people who, you know, may have a good time at the country club on Sunday lunch, but they don't have a clue of the war they're in. On the other side, you have people like Stacey, who, as a competitor, you have to respect. She's ruthless. She's tough. She's determined. And she took these guys, both the governor and the secretary of state, got taken to the cleaners. And I think the only hope we have in Georgia is for the legislature to stand up, as under the Constitution, it very specifically says the election of the electors is a function of the legislature, not the governor, not secretary of state, not the courts. And so the Georgia legislature, which is Republican, could intervene, demand a recount, and then let the Democrats sue to block us from checking on phony ballots. And let's let the whole country see how determined they are to protect the right of people who are illegal to vote.
It's the worst possible combination because you had more absentee ballots than ever before and a lower rate of rejection. So it was exponentially worse than it was.
You know, one of the things I'm checking on now, so I can't say this with certainty, but in the spring and summer, the Secretary of State said there were at least 1,000 people who double voted. That is, they got an absentee ballot, voted it, and showed up at the polls. And I've not seen any reference to double voting. Because, of course, if you can't check the absentee ballot, then how do you know whether or not the person double voted? And so, but there were 1,000 this summer in the primaries. So I think, again, every time you turn around, now they did find a substantial number of votes in Floyd County that had not even been reported, which is a very, very Republican county, probably nets 800 or more for Trump and shrinking Biden majority. But you see the same, by the way, it's worse in Philadelphia. Philadelphia may be the most corrupt political city in the United States. And it's worse in Nevada, where they literally have outlawed any legality. It's an amazing case. I may write a book about this because now that we're digging into it, some of these stories are so unbelievably abusive of common sense and decency that the country needs to realize how badly we need election reform.
This holiday season, more people will be mailing stuff than ever before. That means the post office is going to be busy. You don't have time for that. Stamps.com brings the post office and now UPS shipping right to your computer. Mail and ship anything from the convenience of your home or office. With Stamps.com, anything you can do at the post office, you can do in just a few clicks. Plus, Stamps.com saves you money with deep discounts that you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings you the service of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS right to your computer. Stamps.com is a must-have for any business, whether you're a small office sending out invoices, an online seller fulfilling orders during this record-setting holiday season, or even a giant warehouse sending thousands of packages a day. Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and 40% off priority mail and 62% off UPS shipping rates. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder why over 900,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. We use Stamps.com, and you should too. Stamps.com is terrific. So don't spend a minute of your Christmas season at the post office this year. Sign up for Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. With my promo code KIRK, K-I-R-K, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in KIRK, K-I-R-K. That's Stamps.com. Enter KIRK, Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Mr. Speaker, I want to follow up with what you were saying in regard to some of these discrepancies. So I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Northern Illinois, and I experienced when I was a freshman in high school, the Barack Obama 2008 campaign. It had a kinetic energy to it. Everyone was on board. Even Republicans were voting for Obama. It is very hard for me to believe that with the incredible movement that Obama had in 2008, that Joe Biden did better than Barack Obama in Dane County, Wisconsin, with the University of Wisconsin-Madison closed. Not only did he do better, he had 60,000 more votes, and even adjusted for population increases, he did about 10% better per the current population than Barack Obama did at his highest point. It's hard for me to be able to look at this just, you know, objectively and think that there is not something nefarious going on. A lot of people say that we should not talk about voter fraud or talk about, you know, the cutting of the corners by the Democrats. What do you think the proper approach for those of us that want to see this remedied? What do you think the proper approach is?
Well, look, I think and I just wrote a newsletter about this the other day, if you really believe, as our Declaration of Independence says, that you've been endowed by your Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, all of that's based on the rule of law. And Lincoln in particular was extraordinarily eloquent throughout the Civil War in describing the importance of the rule of law. So the rule of law starts with your sacred right to vote, because you're picking the people to whom you're going to loan power. And if your vote is canceled by an illegal vote, or if your vote is drowned by 50 illegal votes, we just took away your most fundamental safeguard as an American. So my view, forget Trump, my view is that this election is so clearly, for the first time, you've had the intensity of a presidential spotlight on corruption, which we used to tolerate, but which got much bigger because I believe the left knew they couldn't beat Trump in a fair fight. And they were so desperate to beat him. They hated him so deeply that I think they spent several years laying the framework for just plain breaking the law. So I think whatever you think about Trump, as Americans, we have an obligation to learn what happened. And we have an obligation, I think, to change the laws. I mean, Georgia's going to have to go back in and fundamentally rewrite the law. And the principles ought to be simple. Every person gets to cast a legal ballot. We get to know that you did it. We get to know that you are legal. It gets to be counted legally. Nobody who's illegal of any kind, including dead people, should be allowed to vote. And you shouldn't have ballot harvesting. When I look at, for example, three times as many 90-year-olds voted in Wisconsin as 2 years ago, more than ever in history. And I start thinking about unions like the Service Employees International Union, which have unionized a large number of nursing homes. And so you have a union worker come by to pick up a ballot for a senior citizen. Well, guess what advice they're going to get when they vote? Or if they're frankly not capable of knowing what's going on, but they sign their name, then the union member is going to vote for them. And I think that is just as illegal as anything else. So I think we're at a real crossroads in reclaiming our rights as Americans and making sure that government isn't literally stolen from us.
And in Pennsylvania, they had a 1,774% voter registration increase for people over 90 years old in the midst of a pandemic. So you have a raging pandemic, and out of nowhere, people 90 plus years old decide to go register to vote at a rate that is so dramatic, it's a 1,774% increase. Something there does not add up. And it's something where the New York Times actually wrote an article back in 2012. They call it granny farming, where you intercept the ballots to and from. You go to, unfortunately, there's dementia units. There are people that are not there cognitively, and you have people that prey on them are able to get the vote that they desire. The issue that I find, Mr. Speaker, is that we as Republicans and conservatives, not President Trump, but most people kind of in the bureaucracy of the Republican Party, they refuse to contest on these election issues because it wasn't something that they thought they had to get into, and they found it to be too messy. It's just like, we'll just discuss ideas and then we'll win. But the Democrats are now into the mechanics of politics. They always have been. And now you're starting to see that that's actually how elections are being decided. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask you about the future of the Republican Party. We don't know how this election will end up being remedied. Hopefully the Supreme Court will intercede. But I think that President Trump has changed the Republican Party for the better, especially to now become a working person's party. He won more non-white votes than any Republican since 1960. He won counties in West Texas near El Paso that Republicans haven't won in nearly 100 years. How do you think that President Trump has positively impacted the future of the Republican Party?
Well, I think, first of all, his focus on America and the idea that our policies should be based around American interests, I think has been very healthy and just made a lot of sense to lots of people. Second, I think his understanding that the deep state and the giant bureaucracies are inevitably in conflict with the rights of individuals has been very well received. Third, I think his understanding that if you cut taxes, cut regulations, and encourage the business climate and small businesses, you create huge numbers of jobs. We're literally seeing it right now. There's a momentum which will sadly, I think, be broken by Biden if he wins. But Trump, you know, one of the reasons he's doing better with African Americans and Latinos is simple. They had better jobs, they had more jobs, and they had rising incomes. And they looked around and said, huh, this is actually working. So I think that in that sense, there will probably be a three-way, I'm making this up, but I think it may be right. There'll probably be a three-way fight in the Republican Party. There will be the old establishment country club think tank party. This is where the Never Trumpers came from. There will be a group in the middle that are sort of wishy-washy, not quite sure what they're doing, trying to avoid anybody yelling at them. And then there will be probably 60 or 65% of the country of the party, which will be very Trump-like. They'll be very committed to, you know, for example, we're going to go into a cycle of shutdowns again because Biden's victory will be interpreted. I just saw Fauci saying we might have to give up Christmas. You know, I'm frankly enraged that in some states a casino is essential, but a church is not. And I think you're likely to see a growing anti-government sentiment as we watch these Democratic governors act like idiots and favor their particular ideology. And if Biden brings that same spirit to the whole country, I think by March or April, you'll have a get government out of my life wing of the Republican Party, which is really the heart of Trumpism. I always have told people, Trump's not essentially a conservative. Trump's essentially an anti-liberal. It's just that the effect of anti-liberalism is to strengthen conservatism. He didn't sit around and read Bill Buckley and read National Review. He just got up and said, that stuff's stupid. And everybody who's a conservative applauded him. And it didn't occur to them that, you know, he hadn't done all the right reading, which is why you get these never-Trumpers who are offended because they spent a lifetime reading all that stuff. And they knew that they knew and he didn't know, but he was effective and they weren't effective. And drove him crazy.
I always loved your framing that you presented of him being as the most successful anti-leftist figure in modern political history. And that actually helped Republicans down ballot all across the country and in Senate races, because in response to President Trump, the left did not try to normalize their positions or try to become more centrist. They just tried to outwoke each other, where they decided to talk more about transgender bathrooms and BLM Incorporated and defunding the police, and in complete opposition to what a lot of people thought would happen in the House of Representatives. Kevin McCarthy is on pace to probably be Speaker of the House in 2022. And a lot of that is thanks to President Trump and the way that he actually framed the argument. What is common sense? What are issues that we care about? And of course, the left and the Democrats decided to basically get rid of all the blue dogs and embrace AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and many of those others. So I love your framing of the three types of the Republican Party: the country club Republicans, and the Chamber of Commerce types, the people in the middle, and then the kind of more movement conservatives. And I think President Trump has, you know, really presented and laid the foundation for movement conservatives now to really run the party. I've always loved, Mr. Speaker, your pieces where you talk about solutions and things that we should run for and actually not just run against things. For Republicans that are now going to be in leadership in the House minority or also the Senate majority, what should we concretely talk about on a policy side, on healthcare, on foreign policy, so that we can actually do what you did in the 1990s and build coalitions that actually impact people's lives?
I think a couple of easy first ones. We should be for transparency in healthcare, so you can know the price and the quality of anything you're paying for. That the estimate by Art Laffer, the economist, was that transparency would probably take 40% out of the cost of healthcare, because you'd have a competitive market and you would know what's worth buying and what's not. So that's an example of where we ought to go. I think in education, we ought to be on the side of the students and against the teachers' union. I mean, this insanity. In Fairfax County, Virginia, they're spending $3 billion for a school system that isn't teaching. Now, why would you spend the money? I mean, they don't want to teach, fine, they can go on vacation. But why should we pay for it? And I think all over the country, people are beginning to realize that the teachers' unions are about the union. They're not about the students. They're not even about normal teachers. They're power centers that are desperate to survive. We're going to, the woke wing of the Democratic Party won't be able to help itself. I just noticed that Biden has appointed as part of the Treasury transition team somebody who's a passionate advocate for reparations for African Americans. Now, reparations are technically unmanageable. You can't possibly define how you would do it. Elizabeth Warren's brief life as a Native American ought to remind everyone what this kind of stuff goes to. But they're not going to be able to help themselves. They're going to get into issue after issue that is, whether it's the transgender issue or it's allowing males who have become female to compete in sports, wiping out the women who are still women who are competing. And there'll be 100 different cultural issues like this. And my guess is that they will dive right back in, rejoin the World Health Organization, rejoin the Paris Agreement, et cetera, and deal with China the way China should be dealt with, given how much money that they've given to Biden, Hunter, and the Hunter family. So it's going to be very interesting to watch them come to grips with reality. And the average American is going to like the Trump formulas. Our policies ought to be, for example, Trump campaigned to get us out of the Middle East. He worked very hard to be very effective with minimum forces and destroyed ISIS, killed the leading Iranian general at no cost to the United States, is now pulling forces out of Iraq and Afghanistan. It'll be interesting to see whether Biden turns it around and reinserts for forces and how the country feels. And that'll split the Democratic Party. So it's going to be a fascinating period. It's also going to be interesting. I've noticed that a number of the anti-Trump people, Republicans, are now writing and making as much noise as they can. It'll be interesting to watch when they realize they have no natural home. They're not ideologically acceptable to the left, and they're no longer personally acceptable to the right. And I think that will be a very interesting reckoning over the next 3 or 4 years.
Have the best Thanksgiving and Christmas ever with Good Ranchers free hickory honey holiday ham. Every new subscription gets a Berkshire hickory honey smoked ham for free. The Berkshire hams are 100% no antibiotics ever, 100% hormone free, and 100% born and raised in America. Hands down the best ham you'll ever eat. Berkshire pork, which is a heritage breed, is known as the world's best pork. And the best part is 100% free with every new subscription. Sign up today and get yours before we run out. And as always, Good Ranchers is 100% American beef and chicken, and now pork. Steaks are always USDA choice and higher. Chicken is 100% all natural, no hormones added ever. Good Ranchers began with the standard of bringing top quality, 100% American-born, raised, and harvested meat to families across America. This vision was instilled into them from their grandparents that owned community grocery stores and believed in trust, charity, and family values. GoodRanchers.com partners only with American ranches from across the U.S. to bring the highest quality meat straight to your door. So go to GoodRanchers.com. That's GoodRanchers.com. It's the place to go. It's GoodRanchersOfTheNest.com. For the price of a family going out to dinner, you go to GoodRanchers.com. Use the promo code CHARLIE to save $20 off your purchase. GoodRanchers.com, promo code CHARLIE. The American people find no home in the kind of country club think tank class that just endlessly writes bad things about President Trump. Normal people want nothing to do with that. In fact, they don't even know who they are. And so, Mr. Speaker, I want you to help build this out further because it's a really interesting kind of development in the political landscape. In a unique turn of events, the Republican Party and conservatives, we are now actually fighting for traditional small L liberal values. Free speech, for example. We are fighting for the dignity of the individual. We are fighting for being able to agree to disagree. In a stunning turn of events, we are now actually critics of corporations having too much influence in government, where the Biden transition team is staffed with every major tech executive you can imagine. I actually think this is a healthy position for the Republican Party to be, because I actually think it represents true conservative values. Can you comment on how we've kind of seen this surprising kind of realignment politically, where Democrats are against speech. They're almost pandering to corporate interests. As you mentioned, Biden will probably get us in another foreign war, and he'll probably redeploy troops, not try to withdraw them. This is a huge sea change from where the Republicans and Democrats were even 15 years ago. How do you view that?
Well, I think you're exactly right. And it's one of the reasons Trump was so controversial, because Trump, in effect, repudiated a large part of what had been the Republican establishment. And I think it was a position I had frankly migrated to over a 20-year period, because we did a lot of things correct in World War II and in the Cold War, but that era was gone. And you had to ask yourself, why were we still doing things that might have made sense in 1989? I also think that it's increasingly obvious the totalitarian left can't win the argument, so they have to eliminate the arguer, because they literally can't win the arguments. And so their mission in life is to go out and do everything they can to crush the person who has an alternative viewpoint. And that allows us, I think, to become the party of free speech, as you pointed out, to become the party that seeks the truth. I'm writing a Thanksgiving newsletter for next week. And it's kind of interesting to imagine how a left winger would write the same newsletter, because, of course, you can't talk about Thanksgiving and the Mayflower and all that. You have to talk about Jamestown and 1619. And, you know, and I think the average American just thinks that's nuts. So we're the party that believes you ought to stand for the national anthem and salute the flag. They're the party that believes you ought to kneel, ignore the national anthem, and probably burn the flag. And I think that gap psychologically is going to get bigger.
No, that's exactly right. And the Democrats, just based on all indications we have post-election, are not all of a sudden dismissing their kind of woke masters. They're re-embracing them. They're doubling and tripling down on all of the worst most radical influences in their party. You see this with the Trump Accountability Project, where they're now listing every single donor and person that worked in the Trump White House or supported President Trump, so that they can never get a job again, that they can be publicly named and shamed. So we are seeing so many different examples of this. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask you about an issue that impacts actually this conversation right now. Many people will be watching this conversation on YouTube. They'll be listening to it on podcasting. The big tech companies are more powerful than any other companies we've ever seen in the history of the planet. They know everything about us. They have an increasingly totalitarian edge to them. How should we as free market conservatives approach these big tech companies? What is the right approach politically and also from a policy perspective?
Well, I mean, first of all, remember, all these people who yell free enterprise, the big tech companies exist because Section 230 of the Federal Communications Act protects them from being sued. So the first thing we ought to do is just take away that protection, so that if the New York Post, the oldest newspaper in America and the fourth largest, gets knocked out by Twitter, they can sue Twitter for economic damages. That will immediately sober them up. Second, I think they have to, in the end, become common carriers. That is, you know, if AT&T had asserted it had the right to listen to your phone calls and to cut off the ones it didn't like, we'd all go crazy. But we have tolerated these internet systems developing that kind of internal attitude. And when you learn, for example, that Facebook has Chinese experts on censorship working in Seattle to help them develop their algorithms, I think it's very sobering. So I think conservatism has always involved great, this has been true all the way back to Jefferson and Washington, has always involved great skepticism about concentrations of power. Because inevitably, as Adam Smith warned in The Wealth of Nations, anytime a group of businessmen get together, it's a conspiracy against the consumer. And so I don't think they can yell free enterprise and then look at all the advantages they get, and whether it's patent law advantages or tax advantages, or you name it. And I think frankly, a lot of what Twitter did was, and to a lesser extent Facebook, was so unconscionable that I'm hoping that the new Senate and the new House will hold very extensive hearings because it really was a left-wing totalitarian moment.
And what happened with the Hunter Biden story was one of the creepiest and most stunning developments I have ever seen and we've ever seen, with a private company interfering with a federal election. What was so amazing, Mr. Speaker, is that Twitter went to testify in front of Congress. And you would imagine that Jack Dorsey probably would have asked his team, hey, what questions are they going to ask me? And probably one of his people said, well, they're probably going to ask you about the New York Post being locked out of their Twitter account. And no one thought to say, hey, maybe we should give them their Twitter account before we go testify to Congress. Imagine how much pride that takes. Imagine the cockiness to not actually course correct or fix what you know they're going to ask you about. And Jack Dorsey says, if they delete the tweet, then they can get their Twitter account. Now, they did finally relent. After about 8 days of pressure, they did finally let the New York Post back in. But these tech companies actually think they run the country.
Well, look, they're not only censoring the President of the United States, which in itself is pretty amazing. There was one particular day just before the election where they censored 4 out of 6 tweets by Rush Limbaugh. So you have the most popular radio talk show host in the country being censored by a group of left-wingers in Silicon Valley. And I think that's really a threat to our very freedoms.
Yeah, and if you can't have access to the public square, then, how are you able even to interface? So in closing, Mr. Speaker, what do you think the marching orders for conservative activists should be? A lot of people have kind of pent-up energy right now. They feel so frustrated that this election was stolen from them. They're not sure the best way to actually stay engaged, stay involved, and what to do. I actually think, regardless of how the presidential election shakes out with Dominion voting systems and all these different things we're looking into, Republicans are in a very good position. And this election shows us that the American people, it's still a center-right country. Despite everything that the power sources might tell you, we are still a center-right country. What should activists do, and what's kind of your advice to them?
Well, I think activists should, first of all, I think activists should be noisy. I think it's very important that people recognize if you're not in the public square, if you're not fighting, if you're not doing the things that need to get done, why would you expect anybody else to know what's up? Second, they should look forward to the 2022 elections. They should be out finding candidates right now. They should take on every Democratic incumbent because as Trump proved this year, he was getting votes in places that you never expected him to get votes in. And I think as the degree to which the Democrats stand for bad government and a bad quality of life for you, I think that we're going to have an opportunity in 2022 that may be the largest we've had in modern times. And if you don't have candidates, it doesn't work. So I would say you want to go out and you want to have everybody you can organize, every neighborhood of every ethnic background. And then, frankly, we ought to emphasize not so much ideology, but common sense. Common sense says children ought to be in school. Every piece of data we have says children ought to be in school. Common sense says you don't bankrupt small businesses. You go down a list of common sense. Common sense says if they're going to be violent criminals, you better have police. So let's have a fight between a common sense party that wants your life to be better and an ideologically left-wing party that wants to dictate to you and tell you to chant, my life is better, even if it isn't. And I think we win that fight by a big margin.
I agree. And what the think tank group doesn't realize is that most of America is actually not ideological. Most of America is actually just very pragmatic. And that's why they tend to be center right. When the ideas are presented, they actually care much more about feeding their family and going to church than some think tank paper that is written about some philosopher they never heard of. So, well, Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, I want to say Gingrich 360 Newt's World. We love your commentary, and we hope to have you back again soon.
Charlie, as always, it's great to be with you. You're a tremendous leader, and you're a part of why the resurgence in 2022 and 2024. Is going to be so historic.
Thank you. I deeply appreciate that. God bless you. Speak to you soon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, you can go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, as always, at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Listen to our previous episodes about Dominion voting systems and Hammer and Scorecard. Thanks so much. God bless. Speak to you soon.